Good morning. If we could call the committee to order. We do not have a quorum at this time, so I will not cannot officially start the meeting, but I did want to get us started. We have two bills on the agenda today. Chair Mariani's bill, House File 3093, and Representative Slocum's bill, House File 3074. To give members and the audience an overview of how we're going to operate today, the two bills have a great deal in common. So we will give the two authors the opportunity to present the bills. Then there are a list of supporters who wish to speak either in favor of the bill or to the content of both bills. We'll allow them about 15 minutes. Any opponents may then have their time. After the opposition and support has presented, then we'll open the floor for members' questions and move the bills formally only at the end of the meeting. I'd like to formally convene the meeting. We've achieved quorum. Given that, I'm under orders from Ms. Gossick to find someone to move the minutes. Representative Faust, since you've reviewed them, would you please move the minutes of our February 24th, 2010 meeting?
I would be honored to move the minutes.
Thank you, Representative Faust. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Chair Mariani, welcome to your committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members, and thank you all for the prompt start here. I appreciate it. And Representative Dabney, it's always wise to listen to Ms. Gossick when she directs us to do something. She has yet to
indeed
direct me in the wrong direction. Members, I'm here with Representative Slocum on House File 3093 and House File 3074. They're obviously very tightly interrelated. What we want to do is talk to you about our general thinking and philosophy in terms of proposing these two bills and why two bills, and then also to speak to the issue within the bills and then hopefully engage in a good discussion here with everyone. last year, as you all recall, we had a pretty lengthy and sometimes heated, I prefer the word full, debate on the issue of updating our current statute that dates back to 1990. That's 20 years, members. 20 years of which the legislature had expressed some desire, a strong desire, to have a quality, responsible alternative to traditional post-secondary teacher preparation programs. And I have to state right off in the very beginning that my posture last year and continues this year is not one where we get into the simple sort of dichotomy of good versus bad. I think Minnesota has a good teacher preparation system. However, like most things in life, you can make things better. And I think part of making things better means that as policymakers, we're constantly challenged to respond to the ever-changing nature of whatever area we're working in. And nothing nowadays has changed as rapidly, I would argue, as the realities that face our K-12 public education system. I don't need to remind this committee of the challenges that we face in our public K-12 system, particularly challenges of providing consistent, uniform, high-quality academic outcomes across an increasingly racial, culturally, economic diversity in our student population. These two bills, members, reflect two ways in which to make the intent of that 20-year law workable to maximize our need to broaden and deepen a fuller range of competency and leadership qualities and experiences in our teaching force that complements traditional teacher prep programs while maximizing student exposure to the fuller range of teacher qualities. That's sort of a lot of gobbledygook to basically say that, members, I think one of the things that, and many of you know, of course, the overwhelming building evidence that the single most powerful, important in-school variable, that leads to student, increased student academic performance is the effectiveness of our teaching force. And for me, I think that part of that effectiveness has to do with an ability to have a dynamic connection between teachers and students that are both highly competent and highly empathetic, if you will, of the unique diversity of the student force. And so what I'm looking for is to broaden the leadership qualities, if you will, that can be discovered, be made available by casting a broader net at the point of teacher candidate preparation. There are other ways to increase teacher effectiveness, and I'm not arguing that this is the silver bullet. I just think it's a very important element to be able to broaden our system's access to a fuller range of characteristics among our emerging professionals. House File 3093, which is the bill that I'm authoring, again, is very similar to last year's bill. It creates the requirements and statute in statute, so we're using a in-statute approach for alternative teacher preparation and licensing programs that the Board of Teaching must approve and that are focused on specific needs. And I'll walk through that bill shortly after Representative Slocum speaks. Her bill, House File 3074, takes a different approach as it authorizes the Board of Teaching to adopt rules. So there we're using the mechanism of directing the board to adopt rules for issuing limited term licenses to candidates from non-traditional programs and without specifying meeting specific needs. It is, I would argue, partially meant to drive greater innovation from our traditional preparation institutions. And so, Mr. Chair, I probably said way too much. I'm sorry, Linda. I might have stolen some of your. But perhaps Representative Slocum can share some initial thoughts, and then I'll walk through the elements of my bill. She can walk through the elements of her bill. We'll get into testimony, and then later on we'll take motions to move these respective bills.
All right. Thank you, Representative Mariani. Representative Slocum, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for hearing this bill. House File 3074 is somewhat different, and how I got interested in this is we had some conversations about teacher preparation, and I've been a mentor teacher, and I've had a number of student teachers in Minneapolis. I teach in Minneapolis Public Schools, and one of my greatest complaints, and I've sent teachers back to their respective colleges because of lack of academic preparation. It's hard to teach a subject if you don't know the subject. And so my interest kind of comes from that. What I like about my particular bill is it requires an academic undergraduate degree. So the candidates have taken American history. I teach American history. So they know their stuff, hopefully, and are a little bit better prepared. It's a different avenue to teaching. I think we can tap into a number of people who are enthusiastic, and while enthusiasm doesn't totally make for a great teacher, it certainly makes for some good classroom dynamics.
Right. Representative Mariani, do you want to walk through the specifics of House File 3093?
I'll do that very quickly, Mr. Chair. House File 3093, if you think about it in terms of the what, the who, kind of broad categories, the what is the Board of Teaching must approve a qualified program or qualified programs that enable a two-year limited-term license. The who are partnerships with school districts or charters with either higher ed institutions with Board of Teaching approved programs or nonprofits who are partnering with higher ed institutions who have board approved programs. The conditions, or if you will, the purpose that would need to be met in terms of if a successful program to be approved by the Board of Teaching are the need, a demonstration of the need for teachers, that there's a shortage of teachers in areas that a school district has posted positions for and has determined that too few candidates are applying. That the teaching staff of the district does not reflect the racial cultural student population, the diversity of their population, or that there is a need to reduce what we call the achievement gap. Candidates to be eligible must have a bachelor's degree and a minimum 3.0 GPA, must pass the Board of Teaching math, reading, writing skills test, and must obtain a qualifying score on the Board of Teaching content and pedagogy test. There are several program characteristics. The dominant characteristics are a minimum 200-hour institutional preparation phase, that the program be research-based and focused on best teaching practices, that the program assesses, evaluates, mentors, and supports candidates through a school-based component, that there is a high-quality staff development design in place, and that the candidates must be required to demonstrate to their local site teams that they're making good progress, adequate progress to standard toward a standards license. The candidates themselves would be, where applicable, subject to local collective bargaining agreements in employment status, that there be a local site team that evaluates the candidate for standard, eventual standard licensure, that the candidate be the teacher record, and then at the very end of the bill, we have a report back on the efficiency of, or the efficacy rather, of this program, so that we could further assess whether we're on the right track with this additional pathway.
All right. Thank you, Representative Mariani. Representative Slocum, do you want to give the committee a walkthrough on House File 3074, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, the bills have some similarities. I'm going to try and highlight what this, what 3074 does. It holds the programs, the alternative licensure programs, to the same high standards as all other Minnesota teacher preparation programs. The bill requires the Board of Teaching to adopt rules guiding the approval of alternative preparation programs and candidates. At a very minimum, the alternative programs must meet the same accountability and candidacy competency standards as all other teacher preparation programs. It must be selective in accepting candidates, be approved and approved higher education, higher ed teacher preparation institution or nonprofit partnering with a higher ed teacher preparation institution, provide mentoring and evaluation to teachers, meet any additional requirements that the Board of Teaching approves. And the minimum for candidates would be to have a bachelor's degree, pass required licensure exams in skills, content, and pedagogy prior to entering the classroom, successfully complete a new rigorous board-authorized work sample in order to be granted a full license. So samples of classroom work that they have done, they have successfully completed, studies that they have done to provide themselves with a greater skill package to enter the classroom with. Meet all other program requirements and meet any additional requirements approved by the Board of Teaching.
All right. Thank you, Representative Slocum. At this time, we've got a number of testifiers wishing to speak. The first on the list is Mr. Daniel Sellers. Mr. Sellers? A man with whom you can have a discussion on the nuances of North Carolina barbecue. You gotta respect that.
Yes, indeed.
Not bad for a boy born and raised in Minnesota. A man apparently with good attention to detail as well. Mr. Sellers, welcome to the committee. Please identify.
I love a little bit of a southern hospitality.
There you go. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Daniel Sellers, honored to serve as Executive Director of Teach for America in the Twin Cities. As I'm speaking, I'll go through just a short deck, and I will try to keep the points fairly brief. I believe it's being handed out right now. As many of you know, Teach for America is a national nonprofit organization that serves to eliminate the education achievement gap that exists not only around the country, but as we all know, exists also in this community. The statistics in the deck highlight some of the massive disparities between children from low-income communities and their wealthier peers in this community. When Teach for America was founded nearly 20 years ago, the Twin Cities wasn't on the obvious list of places to go. That, over the last 20 years, has changed, and we feel a need, due to the achievement gap, to serve this community. Teach for America recruits outstanding recent college graduates to commit at least 2 years in the classroom, over two-thirds of whom stay in the field of education for the rest of their lives. As you'll see in this brief deck, we recruit aggressively at top colleges and universities around the country, including those in Minnesota. And we select people based on extremely rigorous standards, and we look for many of the similar things that hiring schools and districts look for, things like a demonstrated record of achievement, strong critical thinking skills, the ability to influence and motivate others. And what we end up with is, last year, just over 4,000 core members were selected from nearly 35,000 applications nationwide. Their average GPA was 3.6, and in fact, 30% were people of color, and 25% were those who shared the socioeconomic background of the students that they were serving. We place our teachers in the places where we feel like they can have the biggest impact. The program is purposefully designed to serve low-income communities, and as mentioned in the bill itself, our core members are hired under the same collective bargaining agreement as exists in districts, and they only assume open positions. They do not bump current or tenured teachers. Sheila Wright, who's Hamlin's Dean of Education, will speak to our partnership with Hamlin, but I think it's important to mention that in addition to the fact that our core members fulfill the exact same coursework requirements as traditionally certified teachers before they gain a full license, they also receive intensive and enormous support from Teach for America itself. They go through about 40 hours of pre-reading, including learning theory and the basic foundations of being a teacher, before spending 5 weeks on Chicago's South Side, teaching summer school, where they have a real, authentic clinical experience, receiving feedback and observation for 5 weeks during the summer, teaching students who share similar backgrounds of the students that they'll be reaching in Minnesota. And then in addition, they receive ongoing support, both through Teach for America. We assign an instructional coach at a ratio of about 30-1, and whatever district or induction or support that new teachers would otherwise receive, Teach for America teachers go through as well. Our teachers are enrolled as full-time students at Hamlin's Master of Arts in Teaching program. I wanted to just quickly touch on the diversity of our core. There's a slide 8, which is on page 4 of the deck, which shows that Teach for America has been incredibly successful in recruiting a diverse core. Basically, what the slide says is that while the top colleges and universities, and by top I don't just mean Harvard and Yale, I mean nearly 300 colleges and universities around the country, are producing about 5% of their graduates who are African American, 5% who are Latino, Hispanic, and 17% that are from low socioeconomic backgrounds, Teach for America has a core that is nearly 10% African American, almost 6% Latino, Hispanic, and above a quarter of our teachers share the socioeconomic background of the students that they serve. The last two things I want to just briefly mention are, we do have 42 teachers teaching across the Twin Cities in grades K-12 in both districts, Minneapolis Public Schools and Brooklyn Center Schools, as well as charter schools. I've included several anecdotal quotes from teachers at the schools where we're serving who have now had experience of Teach for America core members in their classroom, but I think perhaps the best endorsement of the program is that every current school and every district where we place will not only be retaining their teachers, but will be hiring additional Teach for America core members next year. That's the level that they're impressed with the program. Those quotes are supported by a large-scale principal satisfaction survey that we ran in 2007. And then finally, the two most rigorous studies that have been done on Teach for America core members, which are included on page 6, the last two slides of the deck, show that essentially, on average, Teach for America core members in their first and second years, because of the quality of individuals, the talent, enthusiasm, and training that we provide, are about as good as, and in some cases better than, traditionally certified teachers in the districts where they serve. So the last thing I'll share is that we've built an incredible number of supporters in the Twin Cities community. You'll hear from many of those today. In the business community, we have letters included from Medtronic, General Mills, Itasca, and the Business Partnership. In the minority community, leaders such as Sandra Samuels, who will testify, will share her support for Teach for America. Education organizational leaders, including the Dean of Students at Hamline University, Sheila Wright, and then district and charter school leaders such as Pat Pratt Cook from Minneapolis Public Schools, and then finally Eric Mahmood, who's the director of Harvest Prep School in North Minneapolis, planned to be here but because of some emergencies at his school could not make it. But I've included testimony that he wrote at about 1:45 this morning because he was so desperate to share his support for the 9 Teach for America core members that he has at his school right now.
Thank you, Mr. Sellers. Next on our list is Ms. Pratt Cook from the Minneapolis Public Schools. As different individuals come forward to testify, what I would ask in the interest of time is that you provide what is unique in your perspective, but try not to be redundant on past testifiers.
Okay.
Ms. Pratt Cook, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the House. My name is Pat Pratt Cook. I'm the Chief of Human Resources and Accountability for the Minneapolis Public Schools, and I actually do have a handout here that actually basically is a summary of testimonials from a number of our principals supporting the TFA core members that we currently have in Minneapolis. I'm here today to testify in favor of the House Files 3074 and 3093, both establishing alternative teacher licensure programs in Minnesota. I think it's really important for me to note that really Minnesota already has a long-standing history of supporting all teacher certification programs. A really outstanding example of that is the Collaborative Urban Educator Program, known as Q, which really has produced for the Minneapolis Public Schools a number of outstanding teachers and principals, and actually a prime example of that is our next superintendent, Bernadia Johnson. Alternative certification programs such as Q for Minneapolis has really served in the past as a key strategy for us to grow our own diverse and highly effective teacher core. It's been our experience that alternative certification programs have a more rigorous pre-screening program on the front end and have effectively screened and advanced more diverse candidates of color into the teaching ranks. While traditional teacher education programs, certainly by virtue of their experience, have produced quality and highly effective teachers, they do not produce a large enough quantity of diverse educators that can effectively and successfully meet the educational needs of our diverse learners. It's also been our experience in Minneapolis that alternative certification programs do an exceptional job of recruiting, pre-screening, and advancing candidates who are very likely to succeed and be highly effective teachers in the classroom. I think the reality for us and for many other urban districts around the country is that every teacher cannot truly thrive in an urban classroom really and be effectively prepared for working with diverse learners. Based on the feedback that we have received from many of our principals in the district, Teach for America core members are considered to be highly dedicated individuals committed to closing the achievement gap and particularly strong in applying data and how they can use that data to differentiate and truly drive the effectiveness of instruction. I think it's also important to note that most studies nationally show that there is very little difference, if any, connection to a teacher's classroom effectiveness and their route to certification. Minneapolis supports any teacher training program, both traditional and alternative, that's committed to training teachers to consistently and effectively meet the needs of our diverse urban learners. In closing, I ask that you please vote yes to House to HF 3074 and 3093. We believe that these bills promote the recruitment and advancement of a new and more diverse cohort of educators trained in the best practices of using data to inform instruction and committed to closing the achievement gap to fulfill our mission of every child college ready. Thanks for the opportunity to speak with you this morning, and I'd be more than happy to entertain any questions that you might have. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pat Cook. Ms. Samuels. Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Good morning, House of Representative folks. Nice to be here. My name is Sandra Hollinger Samuels, and I'm currently president of the Peace Foundation, which is also doing business as the Northside Achievement Zone. And the zone is a collaborative movement of over 50 organizations in partnership with our public district and public charter schools, including Seed Academy, Mr. Eric Mahmoud. And our goal is to create a cradle to college pipeline straight through the heart of North Minneapolis. Today I'm here as a mother and a neighbor who resides in North Minneapolis, an area that you know is disproportionately impacted by the failure of our current educational, governmental, community, and familial systems. I'm also a member of a number of coalitions focused on eradicating the achievement gap for all, particularly African-American children in Minnesota, namely the Northside Policy Action Coalition. Alternative certification is our number one pillar. We've hired a lobbyist who's sitting up there, Wave James, to speak on our behalf here because we're so passionate about that. But also another group called the African-American Leadership Forum, education policy group that's made up of business leaders, nonprofit, the faith community, just, you know, kind of 170 of who's who in terms of the African-American community in Minnesota. And both groups really passionately support and unequivocally support programs like Teach for America and the Alternative Teacher Licensure. Ultimately, for me, and I think for a lot of African-Americans, we're so passionate about this because we really believe that this is the civil rights issue of our generation. And we believe that this is yet another path. And I know we've all been trying and working on eradicating the achievement gap, but we believe that this is a key strategy in making that happen. A couple points. I think the groundswell is really growing for this in our community because, again, like Mr. Sellers mentioned, it has proven results. You know, if you look across the country, there's a lot of data points that say that core members of Teach for America have impact on student achievement that exceeds that of experienced certified teachers in the same schools. Also, it's also been mentioned, I'll be real quick, that we will get more highly educated and passionate teachers, particularly African-American teachers, in the classrooms where they're most needed. What Daniel did not mention is that last year, Teach for America had to reject 30,000 applicants and had hundreds on waiting lists, and that 35% of Harvard's senior class of African Americans applied to be Teach for America core members. They wanted to come to North Minneapolis and teach. Also, it saves money. It saves public money. You know, Teach for America actually picks up the $20,000 tab for recruitment and training of each core member every year. And we also believe that this will support the public district schools and the public charter schools in their reform efforts by attracting no excuses kind of teachers who are as compelled to become core members as I was to become a Peace Corps volunteer. I think that they've heard the call, and they believe in America and in the ability of all students to learn. And it really is kind of juxtaposed to some of the teachers who, I think it's been mentioned, have not cut their teeth in terms of teaching in the urban core, low-income areas. I know at one achievement gap meeting that the DFL often puts on monthly, a Minneapolis school teacher mentioned that. She said, look, it's tough. You know, if you give me a kid who grows up through the Minneapolis public schools and they're in the system and they show up for school, I can teach them. But if you give me the kids from Indiana and Chicago who come here and they're in and out of school, I can't teach them. You know what? I get it, but teachers who are coming through this path don't often say that. They sign up to come and teach the children who have that same kind of profile. In fact, if you ever check out their marketing material, the call for teachers through this pathway is a national injustice. What must we do in order to change the trajectory for low-income children? So in closing, it is my hope that you will put the interest of children ahead of anything else, ahead of the demands of the adults who make up Education Minnesota, and ahead of your partisan stalemates. For example, Pawlenty's destructive veto of the legislation like GAMC, in contrast to his ardent support of this kind of legislation, which made me real nervous, should not be the deciding factor in terms of your vote against it. Because it happens. It happens across the country. Instead, when you vote, please consider the fact that today, whereas the proficiency in Minneapolis in grades 3 through 8 for white students is 85% in reading and 77% in math, it is only 32% in reading and 22% in math for African-American students. When you vote, please consider the fact that today, whereas the 11th grade math proficiency rate for white students in Minneapolis is 59%, it is only 8% for African-American students. When you vote, please consider the fact that today in Minneapolis, whereas only 7.7 kids in poverty are white, over 60% of them are African-American. When you vote, please consider that today only 1 in 10 children, 1 in 10, from low-income communities graduate from college. When you vote, please consider the fact that the 4-year graduation rate in Minnesota today for African-American students is 40.9%. And when you vote, please consider the fact that for those who do graduate, they perform on par with 8 graders from more affluent neighborhoods. We can do better. The results of the alternative certification for teachers, I think, to date proves that. And so really, in passing this legislation, I think that we will boldly be continuing, because I know we're on that path in terms of Minnesota, and I'm very proud of that. I think we will continue on a path of guaranteeing low-income students of color the same high-quality education that we want for our own children and our children's children. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Samuels. Dr. Wright. Good morning, Dr. Wright. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members. I am Sheila Wright, Dean of the School of Education at Hamline University, and it's a real pleasure to be here with you this morning. I would like to just go on record as saying that I am an ardent supporter of alternative licensure pathways. Both bills are moving in the right direction. I would like to speak specifically to the quality and the integrity of the Teach for America program relative to Hamline University. As all of you are aware, Hamline is the first university in Minnesota. We have an over 150-year history of innovation and experience and preparing teachers. Right from the beginning, we saw this as our pathway, and that passion and that vision remains today. We are known throughout the state for our work, and many of you have placed your trust in us by supporting our programs, such as the MNSTEP program, sponsored by our Center for Global and Environmental Education, which raises the awareness of science for teachers all throughout the state, and the fine work of our Center for Excellence in Urban Teaching, which has helped tremendously with helping teachers understand the complexities of the intercultural communication and their personal skills in supporting learning environments for children and adolescents. And they're actively engaged in the community. And many of our fine faculty and staff do so as well. We were among the first in the nation to have an English, a second language program, over 25-year history of providing such programs. And let me say that the current superintendent of St. Paul Public Schools is a graduate of that program. So I want to say that there are others in the state, such as the Bush Foundation, who actively seek us, Hamline University, because of the integrity of our program, because of our long, rich history in providing outstanding support and adequate support of teachers and their placement within the our communities. I would say that with the Bush Foundation and initiative in particular is helping all of us throughout the state have more intentionality on the recruitment, placement, preparation, and induction of teachers. So we are learning. We know we cannot solve 21st century problems with 20th century thinking. And even Einstein once told us that we cannot move forward without substantially new ways of thinking. So let me speak directly to Teach for America students, because I want to leave no doubt in your mind, no quiver in at all. Teach for America students are held to the same standards of excellence as any of our other candidates, and for that matter, at any other institution in Minnesota. In fact, they're probably held to higher standards. And you know why? Because they are asked to take the practice exam even before entering our program. This exam is typically held in more conventional programs at the end of their program. So I want to say, in terms of our students and our faculty at Hamline University, our faculty comment often on the high quality of the candidates through Teach for America and their joy in working with them. They're passionate about what they do and actively engaged in their work. And they themselves receive the same quality of performance and the same level of attention that any other student has in our programs. So thank you so very much for your privilege, for this privilege to speak to you. I hope clearly I've laid at rest any questions that you might have about academic integrity of Teach for America's program relative to its work with Hamline University. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. Is there anyone else in the room who wishes to testify in favor of either House File 3074 or 3093? Seeing none. Ms. Allswager. There you are. Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allswager, Education, Minnesota. And at the very beginning of your meeting, you said that you would like to make sure that the testifiers were not redundant, and I can probably assure you that I will not be redundant to what the other testifiers have been saying.
Thank you for that, Ms. Allswager.
Actually, that isn't exactly true, because I think the testifiers who were before you just recently all are talking about what they want for kids, and that's closing the achievement gap, meeting the needs of kids in the classroom, improving the graduation rate, and all the wonderful things that the testifier said. We agree with that. We are also very, very concerned about having quality educators in the classroom. I think they would say the very same thing. I think that we can find a way to work together. I have no doubt about that, and to try to come to some resolution. Our main issue is who is the teacher of a record. I want all of you who were teachers at one time to think and ask yourself, what was the single most important and valuable piece of your teacher education training? I've asked this question to a number of teachers, and almost everyone, if not every one of them, says their student teaching experience, where they are not the teacher of record, they are the person in the classroom who is learning from a teacher of record, a fully qualified, licensed teacher. Because the preparation is one thing, but working in the classroom with a group of 30 kids, when you have not had that experience before, is overwhelming. And I'm guessing that some people are thinking that student teaching would be the answer to the question that I asked. the testifier who stated that taking the challenge to meet the needs of low-income students of color and other students at risk, other needs that our students, our communities have, fabulous, wonderful. We're ready to work with you. We are not an obstacle to meeting the achievement gap, to preparing our teachers for those needs. Professional development with existing, ongoing teachers, that's very important. We can't just do this or have this solution for only those entering the profession. Let's look at a broader approach. I think there's some concerns, too, about the cost of the mentoring in some of these bills. I think this is a cost to districts, and there's some fiscal implications. Mr. Chair, I could go on and on about this issue, but I, you know, this is the chair's bill. I understand that. And our main concern is quality. We have the collaborative urban educator that somebody mentioned. That's another route that works. And you don't have somebody as a teacher of record who is somebody who is not the teacher of record teaching the classroom. And so those, I don't think I said that correctly. The teacher of record should be someone who is fully licensed. And that is the case with the collaborative urban educator. And to close, I'd say, what is the purpose of this bill? If it's a shortage, to meet the needs of the shortage areas, let's define this bill as, or these bills, only for shortage areas. If it's to reach, to deal with the achievement gap, we question, are you really going to be able to deal with the achievement gap with somebody who has not had a student teaching experience? These teachers may do better in the third, fourth year of teaching. But the first and second year, third year of teaching, when you have not had that experience under a supervising teacher, can be an experiment with kids. And you cannot rewind the kids' education. If they're in a physics class, chemistry class, or math class with somebody who has not had experience teaching kids, you can't rewind and get that class back for those kids. So I will leave my comments at that, Mr. Chair, and would be more than happy to answer any questions. But I do want to state very clearly at the conclusion of my testimony, this is all about quality. It isn't as much about who is preparing. We want our kids to be successful, and we are here to join with anybody here in this room to make sure that the programs are quality for our teacher preparation and that we have fully qualified licensed teachers as a teacher of record when they go into a classroom.
Thank you, Ms. Walswager. If you'd actually remain at the podium for a moment, let me first ask this. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify either for or against House Files 3074 and 3093? Please come down, Ms. Ciccone. Ms. Walswager, I'm asking you to remain because I believe there's a question for you, but I'm wanting to get through all of the testifiers before we turn to questions. Ms. Ciccone, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Mary Ciccone with Parents United for Public Schools. I'm sorry I wasn't quick enough when you said everyone in support. So, first and foremost, Parents United is in support of these bills. It's rare that we take a position on bills like this, but because of the commitment to increase diversity in the teaching force, the use of data to drive instruction, the use of mentors and coaches to increase teaching capacity, the relationship with Hamline University for instruction for these teachers, and the track record in increasing student achievement has caused us to support these bills. And actually, we would say one other thing. We hope that our traditionally prepared teachers would also have these supports because we think these are the supports that actually drive and increase achievement in our students. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience wishing to testify? Representative Faust, is your question for Ms. Alswager?
No, it is not.
All right. Then, if I may, Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question. I appreciate your testimony. I understand that you are about quality for kids, and we all are about that. And, of course, we're talking about licensure here, which is a step that all teachers need to go through to be eligible to be hired by a local school district. So my question for you, as we talk about quality and being concerned about having the right people in front of children teaching, what's your thoughts about the role of the local school district and the administration and the hiring committees that are set up to hire teachers, their role in making sure that we have quality teachers? You know, a licensure in and of itself doesn't ensure that we have quality teachers. And I don't care what, if you go through a traditional system or if you go through some sort of alternative pathway like this. Real brief, I was on hiring committees when I was on the school board in Hayfield, and I sat in on many, many, many teacher interviews, and we look at all kinds of things in hiring teachers, and quite frankly, not knowing always how much education they had, because that was the job of our administrator, to make sure the qualifications were there, the teachers on our hiring committee, as well as the board members, as well as the administrators, we were concerned about the adequacy of the communication and the way they came across to us and trying to decide if it was right for children. My point is, whether we do alternative pathways, whether we do a standard pathway going through an institution, what do you believe is the role of the local school districts, and what is your concern about them if we have an alternative pathway teacher versus a standard traditional pathway teacher? What is there in those two differences that might be harmful in the local school district making a determination who's best to put in front of their own kids?
Ms. Allswiger.
Mr. Chair, Representative Demmer, I'm very glad that you asked that question. I think it's a good question to discuss here. I'm going to start by taking a step back to talk about the Board of Teaching. It's the Board of Teaching's role to determine a standard for teacher licensure. And so when a teacher is licensed by the Board of Teaching, you should know that they have met a certain level of standards. Education Minnesota is not opposed to alternative routes of teacher preparation. What we are opposed to is lowering the standards that the Board of Teaching would use to say that a person is licensed. We believe in this program that these individuals who would become licensed, they'd have a two-year limited license, would not have met the standards that other teachers would have to become fully licensed teachers. In other words, they're not doing the student teaching, they're not proving themselves under the supervision of a licensed teacher. Okay, that being said, the role of a school district, we believe, is that they should be able to select from a pool of licensed teachers who have met the standards put forth by the Board of Teaching. There is a second role. School district decides they're going to hire candidate A, and they hire candidate B. Well, we have a three-year probationary period in Minnesota, and it is also the school district's job, the administrator's job, to determine, even though that person had a license and met the standards, there are times when teachers don't meet the needs of the school district, and for 3 years, a school district can terminate a probationary teacher because they feel it's right to do. We support terminating probationary teachers who are not doing a job that they should. We support evaluating teachers in their probationary period and throughout their career, meaningful evaluations and providing remediations, peer review, and all of those mentoring, coaching to improve a teacher's performance. And so the district has roles and the Board of Teaching has roles in different ways throughout the career of a teacher.
Representative Dimmer, follow up?
Well, Mr. Chair, Ms. Osborne, that was a great answer because I think it makes all kinds of sense. The point that I was going to make, and I think you helped me make it, and I think we're in agreement on this, there are roles to play here. And I think an alternative pathway or a traditional pathway does not necessarily a good teacher make. It's really about the makeup of the individual. And I guess the point that I was making in your testimony about quality teachers in front of children, as always, I want to make the point that I think local school boards, locally elected school boards, and local administrators want the best people in front of their children. And I think by us opening the gate, so to speak, with an alternative pathway for people to get into the teaching profession at different times in their careers is a good thing. And I think we got to remember that just because we have an alternative pathway and grant a license maybe in a different manner, that doesn't necessarily mean we're going to lower quality of teaching. And I think the local school districts and their administrators and the HR committees, or however you want to structure it, to hire, they will really be the final filter in terms of who's best to put in front of their kids. So I just want to keep that perspective as we talk about, is this the end-all, the type of licensure we give? And so I think you helped make that point for me, and I think we're in agreement on that, and I appreciate that viewpoint.
I think how we'll handle it at this point is I'll ask the two authors to return. Ms. Allswager, you're turning out to be popular. Why don't you stay where you are? and pull up some extra chairs. We have a growing list of folks wishing to answer or to ask questions. So people who have testified, please be prepared to come forward to answer questions. Mr. Sellers, I know you're on deck for one question. So if we can just get a, Oprah's couch going up there, we can just work our way through the list and answer questions rather than jump around. Representative Faust, why don't we return to you then? You've been waiting patiently. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a question at the end of this, but I guess I have three concerns with this that were really not addressed by any of the testimony. First of all, the 200-hour minimum requirement I think is really short. I really agree that there needs to be some student teaching as a part of that. 200 hours is equivalent to maybe four college classes, and that just doesn't seem to be enough to cut it for me. The second point I'd like to make is, and we had a discussion, Daniel Sellers, I believe we discussed in my office, and I think that you mentioned there were thousands of people applying to get into this program, and if we're selecting 20 or 30 out of several thousand, our odds of getting the people that can succeed at this are really pretty good. If you take the top 1% of any group of people, you can have them do almost anything and they're going to do it successfully. My concern is when this gets opened up so that instead of 20 or 30 people a year, we're talking to 200 or 300 or 200 or 3,000 people a year coming through this, all of a sudden our success ratio is not going to be anywhere close to where it is now. And that's a huge concern of mine. And the third concern is where the question actually is my degree in college was in economics, and I could probably teach economics, if I had to, for sure with a couple hundred hours, but I could do that. But if you put me in a chemistry room, it would be a scary thing, and bad things could happen. And so I'm wondering if you would at least consider changing this, and I'm looking at Bill 3093 to at least limit it to they have to have a bachelor's degree in at least a related field to what they're studying or what they're going to teach. Like I say, it would really be scary if I were in a chemistry room running chemistry experiments. And so I think that, but economics or even accounting, I could pull that off. And so if we could at least limit it to a related field, I'd feel a lot better about that. So that's the only question I've really got.
Okay, there were a couple of questions. I think I'll go to Mr. Sellers to respond, and then Representative Mariani to the specific question of Representative Faust. Mr. Sellers first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Faust. I'll just briefly answer the two specific questions. I want to stress, because I'm not sure that this is clear, and I would welcome any of you to talk more about this. Teach for America does provide a clinical student teaching experience. I just want to lay that out there. They spend 5 weeks. Now that is as opposed to traditional teachers who I think spend 10 weeks. So now we're talking about a difference between 5 and 10 weeks. Student teaching on Chicago's South Side during the summer before they ever enter the classroom and get in front of a Minnesota classroom as the teacher of record. The 200-hour instructional phase is in addition to the 5 weeks of student teaching that they're doing during summer school in Chicago. In terms of the selectivity and the bachelor's requirement, those questions may be better answered by Karen from the Board of Teaching. I know that the board serves as the gatekeeper to ensure that programs are high quality, and I know in our experience, all of our teachers who are teaching a subject such as math or science do have a major in a related field, Of course, in elementary, our teachers don't have an elementary major because that's not the typical undergraduate degree. Does that answer the question to the extent that I can?
And Ms. Ballmer, do you want to respond? It looks like he threw the ball to you.
You just know the language better.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I'm Karen Baumer with the Minnesota Board of Teaching. I didn't intentionally crash the party. I was invited up here, but I'm happy to answer questions. And specifically to your questions, Representative Faust, I think that Daniel has depicted well what part of what the consideration is in terms of who is appropriate to be in these classrooms. There are definite correlations in some content areas, and you've appropriately identified some business, economics, and so forth. But some of our licensure fields don't have that direct correlation to a college student's degree or major. And we do have elementary education students in through Teach for America who are teaching right now. And this, in part, gets to Representative Demmer's question in terms of the placement of these folks and the local portion, the local side of this equation. That is a huge part of the question, and actually was one of the compelling variables for the Board of Teaching to launch Teach for America through the authority that we do have to do so. And really what happened was we were approached by school administrators and local folks, principals, administrators from districts, charter schools, who said, we think this is part of our strategic plan. We think this is part of the puzzle in terms of meeting our goals, reaching those students that are struggling. This is not the silver bullet. You heard Representative Mariani say that, and we know that. But these districts came to us and said, we think this is part of the equation and part of the solution for us. And so we do have folks in the elementary classrooms, and as an example, and that's part of why that language about content specific is not there currently. Perhaps there's a way to go that direction in the licensure fields for which it does apply, and we could certainly entertain that.
Chair Mariani, do you wish to respond? All right, then Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First question is for the authors of the bill, I guess, and then one for Ms. Ballmer. For the authors of the bill, we usually hear from MACTE when we have these bills, and we did hear from Hamline University, but I didn't catch if they were speaking for MACTE or not. And so are they neutral on the bill since they're not speaking for or against it, or what is their position? And then for Ms. Ballmer, if we're going to have, is it true that we're repealing the current alternative licensure rules in this bill and promulgating new ones? And I'm wondering, knowing that rules sometimes take longer than expected or planned, I'm wondering what happens if the new rule is not finished and the old rule is repealed.
Either Representative Mariani or Representative Slocum.
Mr. Chair, I'll take the first question, which is an easier one, and I'll allow Ms. Ballmer to think about the answer to the second one. But I have in no position to speak on behalf of MACTE. I didn't take Hamline University's testimony here to be on behalf of MACTE, other than just to be on behalf of the quality of the program that they offer for these candidates that are currently in this alternative teacher route. I could share with members that one of the things that I did this year was to convene a meeting with at Minnesota, with MACTE, with TFA, just to explore ahead of time before we threw in a bill where there might be areas of strong consensus, and to see if there continue to be areas of strong disagreement. And I have to say that, and I can't speak to the entire group, that, you know, by and large, for the most part, I think people are pretty much in agreement on some really broad principles here about Minnesota's need and desire and importance of making sure that we continue to push forward in ways to create ever more effective, high-quality teachers. Obviously, there are the small areas of disagreement are not insignificant, and Ms. Hall-Swiger, you know, share the particular concern around the teacher of record issue, and that then relates back to the issue of of, you know, the preparation time relative to classroom experience. That was the same issue that was last year. It continues to be the same issue this year. Anyway, all that by way of saying that this author, I want to share with members that this author, my approach and style was not to attempt to ram anything down anyone's throats as much as to explore a process by which we might arrive at some common areas of agreement. We don't have 100% agreement, but I am emboldened by the fact that pretty much everyone here are really centered on really good, strong principles. I think MACD shares those principles. I would venture to say that I think MACD perhaps needs to be challenged, just like we all need to be challenged, to both reconsider the dominant framework by which we produce teachers through our traditional programs, and to do so in a much more expedient and quicker way. But I don't know that MACD's taken a position on this. I'd be surprised if their position is that they're supportive of these two bills.
Ms. Ballmer, to the specific questions regarding the state rule.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Greiling, to your questions, the short answer is that we do have current authority that we have used, as I said a moment ago, to launch Teach for America. It is in rule. There actually were two actions that the Board of Teaching took, and just to provide the big context, and you should know this, that there were two actions. One was to allow the actual Teach for America candidates into the classroom because they're not fully licensed. There is a provision in state law that allows any entity to request a variance on our rules and or a portion of our rules, and that's what Teach for America did. Recently, St. Cloud State University did something similar for a different program, but we've had other institutions use that mechanism. So, at any rate, that was the first action, that Teach for America came to us to request a waiver on a portion of our rules to allow these candidates into the field. The second gets to your question. The second action of the Board of Teaching was for program approval for Hamline University to serve as the higher education partner, because as you know, or heard just a moment ago, most of our preparation programs do have a required minimum 10-week full-time student teaching requirement. Now, the Teach for America program does not have that same requirement. We believe the strength of their program and the support within the classroom provides some very real and meaningful safeguards around that, and we can discuss that if you'd like. But at any rate, we used a mechanism in our rules. 8700, 7600 is the rule, and it's called experimental approval. And so we approved Hamline to be an experimental program provider. And we've done this throughout the years for other institutions in different scenarios. But they were allowed to be experimental because they weren't meeting that particular requirement.
Chair Marianne, or Chair Greiling.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So in other words, the experimental rule will still be there.
Ms. Ballmer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greiling, yes, that is current rule right now. I don't believe that this would be in conflict with it. To be forthcoming, we would like to get back into that rule and do some work in it, but I don't believe this would be in conflict.
All right. Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A wide range of the issue I was going to be was raising has already been covered, but as a result, instead of asking a specific question to Mr. Sellers and one to Ms. Allswiger, I want to make a comment and then let either of them comment. The issue around teacher of record and student teaching seems to be at the heart of the matter, and Mr. Sellers has already commented on the 5-week versus the 10-week requirement and the supports that are there in lieu of. So that's there on the one hand. On the other hand is the research data that Mr. Sellers has presented us with on the outcomes that Teach for America teachers or I don't know what you call them in lieu of teachers. What do you call them?
Teachers. Mr. Sellers.
They're also called
core members. All right. The core members, the results, the performance results we see here. So I think to address this issue in a balanced way, we need some balanced research. And I would like to see to understand if what research exists on the side of the length of student teaching and the what's the teacher called? I'm losing my own track here. The certified teacher,
the fully licensed
teacher of record. So is there research that supports the importance of a teacher of record or the productivity or results of a teacher of record that relates to the kind of results we see here about Teach for America performance? And I think we need to understand that to dissect this argument.
Okay. Mr. Sellers and then Ms. Allswager.
Mm-hmm. It's a great question, and I would have to do some research on my own to pull that up. The research that we have is obviously the two largest studies that have been done on Teach for America are the ones that I shared. I'll be forthright and say that there have been studies that have been less friendly to Teach for America. I think they were studies that were done long ago in the infancy of the program, and some of those studies have actually been questioned for their methodological rigor, etc. But the most rigorous studies that have been done on not only Teach for America but programs such as Teach for America show that alternatively certified teachers do, on average, about as well as traditionally certified teacher. That the base of research shows that. So thank you, Representative Breinert. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Allswager.
Mr. Chair, Representative Breinert, certainly Linda Darling Hammond has done some research. I since you asked the question, I will answer it. But I purposely chose not to cause any kind of controversy with any other groups. But since you've asked, there is some research, and I'll be happy to get some of it to you. You know, everyone can look at research and find morsels here that work for you or don't work for you. And what I would suggest, there are candidates out there that are in Teach for America actually is existing in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Brooklyn Center, and charter schools. I would ask some teachers, how is it working? Ask the teachers who teach with it, teach next to them. And we're not opposed to having people find out. We want whatever is working to work and to be in Minnesota.
Thank you. Members, we're about 10 minutes away, maybe 9 from a vote, and 5 members are on the list with questions, and I'd like to give as many members the opportunity to ask their questions as possible. Representative Downey.
I'll pass. Mr. Chair, Representative Breinert asked my question. Thank you.
Perfect. Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple questions on Bill 3093, the Chair's bill. Subdivision 5 on the second page, it's 2.35. It's approval for a standard license. And I have a question about that. Does that approval come at the end of the 2-year probationary period? And then you have a site team that may include teachers, school administrators, post-secondary faculty, but it doesn't tie it down. So it could be that it's only administrators and we don't have teachers making recommendations. And it just appears that the Board of Teaching, it says on the next page, must issue a standard license. So if you have a Teach for America teacher and an administrator says, I think they should be given a standard license, you have no choice, as I understand it, Ms. Palmer, but to issue that license. So if you could clarify that for me, if that's really the intent, that you can either have a collaboration, a group of people that make a decision on a teacher's qualifications, a Teach for America's qualification, or it could be anyone in the school, depending on the school, that makes that recommendation. And then are you restricted and you have no choice but to issue that license?
Thank you. Let's go to the chair, to the author first, and then you can lateral it to Ms. Palmer if you wish.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, the intent is that in the first part that it could be at the point of the 2-year threshold. And I'll let Ms. Palmer speak for herself, but the Board of Teaching would issue the standard license you know, based on successful performance of the program. We're pretty clear about that in our language, and also based on the recommendation of licensure in the subdivision that you referenced. I do acknowledge on 9235 the local site team, it's permissive about the makeup. I think that's another point that you made in terms of, so who might be on that site team. And I'm certainly open to tightening up that if it's desired, but would like to hear more information from perhaps the board and program providers and what might be the more powerful language that works for their circumstances. But anyway, let's stop there.
Ms. Palmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Wonderful questions, Representative Newton. And I would direct your attention to Subdivision 3 and the fact that there will be, under this provision, program approval, board-adopted criteria that would serve as the basis for program approval for any of these programs. And when we approve a program, that is a binding agreement that you a program cannot recommend someone for licensure outside of what they have been approved to do. So, for example, if a program is approved and 6 months later decides that they want to substantially change the course sequence, they want to delete a course, they want to add a course, you know, something like renaming a course would not rise to this level, but a substantial change in the program would require, in our current rules, an amendment that we would have to be notified. So there is a safeguard in the sense that any program approved would be bound to those requirements set forth in the program as approved by the Board of Teaching. And here we would set forth those criteria and then use them as the basis for approving programs. The other issue that you raise, and Chair Mariani spoke to it, is that May 2.35, and it is my understanding that the May came because earlier in the bill you have sort of an either or, that there's some options in terms of who these providers might be. They might be, and we would love to see, a higher education institution alone develop one of these programs, but you also may have, and in the case of Teach for America, a nonprofit organization partnering with a higher education organization. And so the nonprofit staff that you see on the following line is sort of the May part, and I believe that's where that came from, because in some cases you would have nonprofit staff. In other cases, you would not. In the cases where you do, I think they want to be at the table as part of that recommending, because they're so deeply invested in these candidates. But perhaps there's a way to clarify that. But I think that's where the language came from.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, if I could just follow up, and I'll try to be very brief. Ms. Allswiger, when you mentioned teacher of record, please clarify that for me. Are you talking about having a teacher in the classroom all the time with the Teach for America teacher, or are we talking about a coach or a mentor teacher who would come in and occasionally work with them?
Ms. Allswiger.
Mr. Chair, Representative Newton, I appreciate you asking that question because I think it got a little confusing. Education Minnesota's concern is that the person who is in the classroom and is the teacher of record, that is the person who is in control of that classroom, should be fully licensed and have the training that we feel that we've talked about here earlier. Our belief is that some of these candidates going through the alternative teacher preparation process are still the teacher of record, but do not have the training that we think that they should have. So the question is all about the qualifications of the individual, the training of the individual who is a teacher of record. So, for instance, to explain a little further, if a student from St. Cloud State is in a teacher preparation program and they work under a regular supervising teacher, that supervising teacher, the teacher who really has that classroom, is the teacher of record. The student teacher is not a teacher of record. That is an individual who is practicing to teach.
Thank you.
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know we're running short of time, and I will try to be as concise as I can.
Thank you. This will be the last questioner.
Thank you. All right. Gosh, I have a number of things. First, I want to direct this, I think, perhaps best to Representative Slocum, is the teacher sitting before us here. Representative Faust asked a question about feeling qualified to teach, perhaps in chemistry versus economics, and that. I'm not clear on what happens now in our school districts if, with budget reductions and that, and teachers have to be laid off, it's the untenured teachers that go first. How are those tenured teachers redistributed, and do they have to be qualified in those specific subject areas to move into those classroom openings?
Representative Slocum.
Mr. Chair and Representative, yes, they do. Teachers are licensed in specific areas, and you may not teach, in at least in Minneapolis, that's my experience, in an area where you are not licensed. So I have known teachers who didn't want to teach in an area that they had a license in, and they may drop that license so that they're not required to, in the budget crunch, in the shuffle that occurs every year, they're not moved to a position where they're teaching something that they don't wish to teach in. No one is forced to teach chemistry and unless they are licensed in chemistry.
Representative Loon.
Thank you. So in order to teach chemistry, you would have had to majored in chemistry along with your teaching degree as well, education degree?
Representative Slocum.
Mr. Chair, Representative, you have to have a certain number of courses, not a major, but you have to have a specific number of courses, and I'm not sure what that number is off the top, but a certain number of courses in chemistry to teach chemistry.
Representative Loon.
Thank you. I appreciate that clarification. Well, you know, I'm just really pulled by the testimony this morning, and I want to thank both Representative Slocum and Chair Mariani for their efforts on this. We've spent a great deal of time in this committee talking about the achievement gap and how to grapple with that, and I think the factors that come to bear on that are enormous. And I am frankly and just really encouraged by the willingness to step forward and say, if we continue to do what we have always done, we are not going to get different results. And we see excellent examples through Mr. Sellers' testimony and Teach for America of what can be accomplished by trying something different. I am personally acquainted with a young woman from my community who was graduated top of her class, could have pursued anything in college, excellent student leader, academically, socially. She had everything, and she chose to go into Teach for America because she felt she could make a difference. And the stories that she has told about her experiences, I wish we could all hear it. It's truly inspiring. So I think, you know, the anecdotal information that you provided, Mr. Sellers, is great. And looking through the quality of teaching and impact and student achievement that principals have commented on in your studies show that, you know, their training and their impact on student performance is at least as good, if not better, than traditional training. And I hope that you all will have some kind of data and studies to back that up. This seems to be anecdotal. Maybe you have some of that, but I think it's great. Ms. Alschweger, I guess you mentioned a couple of concerns, and I don't think any of the committee members would just disregard those. But you mentioned concern about the cost to the districts of mentoring these teachers, and but yet also we're nodding your head in agreement that the cost of mentoring any new teacher, regardless of training, is an issue and something that needs to be done. So, you know, I don't know if you could comment on difference here. We talked about maybe differences in training, but all new teachers are going to need to be mentored. So I don't know that I see that as a significant downside, because you can't throw a brand new teacher into a classroom and not expect the more experienced teachers or the administration of that school district to leave them unsupported. An actual question here for you. Education Minnesota has raised some questions with regards to this proposal, but I guess I'm not clear on what your organization's proposal would be to address teacher quality. And does Education in Minnesota believe that teacher quality is a factor in the achievement gap in our state?
Ms. Alschweger, I believe that was a yes or no question.
I teacher quality is very important, and can I say just another sentence?
I would welcome you to speak with Representative Loon after the committee has adjourned. It looks like a long conversation is in both of your future. With that, the chair, under the press of time, would like to move Representative Slocum's bill, House File 3074, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance with a further recommendation to be re-referred to the committee, the K-12 Finance Division. Representative Slocum, any closing comments?
Briefly. Mr. Chair, I just want to point out that my bill provides school-based experiences that include supervision, observation, mentoring, and evaluation. I'm done now.
All right. Thank you. With that, all those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you very much. Chair Mariani moves that House File 3074 be recommended to pass. 3093, pardon me. Even with a script, I can't quite get it right. 3093 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. Chair Mariani, any closing comments?
We'll make the text bigger in the script for you.
I'm increasingly needing the large print version. Yes, thank you.
Mr. Chair, I do need to make a very quick amendment, 3093, and that would be on line 1.15 after the hyphenated word board approved to insert alternative. That would make it consistent with 1.12, and so I would like to incorporate that into I think I can do that, right? No, we got to vote on
it. We have to vote on that, unfortunately. There's an amendment before us on line 1.15 after the hyphenated word board approved, insert the word alternative. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Mariani, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, members, briefly, and again, we do have two tracks here. Some of the mechanics behind that is that Representative Slocum's bill calls for rulemaking, which, of course, begs the question of appropriations relative to that, and so the Finance Committee needs to vet that issue through. 3093 does not evoke a need for appropriations, so it's my desire to send this straight to the floor and to have a debate there. Let me just very quickly say, and I want to thank you, Representative Loon. You know, I've been working in this area both here and in my nonprofit work for a long time now, and I have to say, when Ms. Samuels gave her testimony, I still get choked up when I hear these numbers and I see these faces every day. And I don't want to get into a good guy, bad guy, situation. We have something that's not working. And there are very real consequences to human beings and to whole communities as a result of that. We're not talking about a magic bullet. We are talking about a very important variable. And so my answer to your question is, I think that you posed to Ms. Halswiger is that it is indeed a very important variable in terms of addressing this issue of disparity in educational outcomes. It doesn't mean that all the other issues of poverty and discrimination, et cetera, aren't there. But we have, members, plenty of evidence out there that says there are powerful ways to even overcome that while we all get our act together to address the much more deeper social injustices that create that. I think this issue of the teacher of record is an important issue, and I don't at all fault at Minnesota for raising this issue. It is, we do have to struggle with that issue in terms of the mechanics here, because members, if you adopt what I would term the rigid construct put forward by Ed Minnesota on this notion, then you wind up totally evading this particular innovative, it just makes it impossible to innovate in this way. And I have been accused for a number of years of Mr. lowering standards here. If you're going to try something new, you're going to get hit with that, okay? And it's not because people are bad, it's because we all have an inherent fear to try something new and different. You're hearing a groundswell coming up from the grassroots of doing something new and different in this era. There's plenty of evidence that shows that it's a good investment. There are bigger fish to fry. We need to change the dominant framework, but it's going to take way too long to do that. We should do that, but in the meantime, we should open up this possibility. So with that, members, I appreciate your support and look forward to the ongoing debate on this important issue.
With that, Representative Mariani renews his motion that House File 3093, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity to chair today. Ms. Gossick, Ms. Murren, thank you for your assistance. With that, we are adjourned.
Yeah, we'll be going in.